Now, time to meet Simon Barker. He's a jazz drummer, plays with people like Don Burrows, Vince Jones, Paul Grabowski and the Australian Art Orchestra, and the Mark Isaacs Trio. Simon started out studying jazz at its birthplace in New York, but it was a trip to Asia, and in particular to Korea, that really had an impact on him and that changed his ideas and approach to playing. He's now made 17 trips to Korea, and this fascination with the music and musicians and singers there is the subject of a documentary film. It was shown earlier this month at the Melbourne International Film Festival, and it'll be screened on ABC TV early next year. Suzanne Donisthorpe heard Simon Barker play at a recent AsiaLink conference on Korean arts, and she talked to him about how this passion for Korean music had come about.
Okay, well, I was touring with Mark Isaacs and we had a stopover in Korea, and during that trip I met some Korean musicians and expat musicians who were there, and gradually I started to go back and forth, and I became really interested in Korean traditional music. And fortunately, AsiaLink funded a trip for me. I spent 3 months studying Korean traditional music in Seoul in 2001, which was the beginning of a really deep, intensive period of study of Korean traditional drumming.
And what was it about that kind of drumming that really captured your imagination?
Well, there's multiple levels. A larger thing would be the music itself. It's beautiful. It's very passionate and flowing and dynamic music. But in a micro level, the way Koreans approach actually playing rhythm really solves a lot of musical problems that I was facing about how to navigate the kinds of compositions I was playing here in Australia. So they have this really interesting flowing way of getting from one rhythm to the next. And so that really appealed to me. And it's like learning a new language. So I kind of play the drums, speaking a kind of rhythmic Korean language on them.
Okay, so can we perhaps get a kind of sense of what that would sound like?
Yeah, I'll play you a track of when I first started to get into this, trying to play Korean music on the drum set. I came home and recorded with a group called Band of Five Names, which features trumpeter Phil Slater and pianist Mac McMahon. And this is a piece called Limited from our CD Empty Gardens. We were kind of exploring music that doesn't really resolve in the way most jazz music does. It's more like a meditation on just flow and kind of interaction without being too specific about anything in particular. And on that track, Limited, that was my first attempt to try and play the drums in a kind of, I don't know, regional way, something that was different that reflected my studies in Korea.
Now, this has become quite a mission for you, hasn't it? And in fact, you made a journey that was filmed and in fact is now a film called Intangible Asset Number 82, which screened recently at MIF. Now, the name of the documentary is intriguing. What does it refer to?
In Korea, there are cultural assets. There's temples and artworks, but there's also there's music, rituals and musical pieces, and because you can't touch them, they're considered intangible. The intangible asset number 82 is ritual music from Korea's East Coast performed by a family of hereditary musicians. So that ritual has been designated intangible cultural asset number 82.
And that was something that you had heard about before, and so you wanted to find this particular cultural asset?
Yeah, well, what happened was I was having a a drum lesson in Korea, and my teacher wanted to demonstrate to me the extremes of Korean music, and he played me a track by Kim Sok-chul, who's a performer of East Coast ritual music, and he said, listen to this sound, it's terrible. And he played it, and I just was absolutely moved. It was the most extraordinary listening experience I'd had, and I just decided then and there that I would I'd just dedicate a large part of my life to just discovering more about Kim Sok-chul's music and how he thinks about performance. And one thing led to another, and I ended up meeting him in the final stages of his life.
And he's a shaman, isn't he?
Yeah, they're hereditary shamans, so they're born into a family of ritual musicians. They're not spiritualists in that they're not charismatic spiritualists. They're professional ritualists, so they would come to your home and perform these rituals. Say if someone had passed away, they would do cleansing rituals. They're also just amazing virtuosic musicians. So on one level, they're talking in quite spiritual terms, and on another, they're just really interested in what the drums can do, you know.
So were you interested in a musical sense to meet this guru?
Yes, absolutely. I was put in contact with a wonderful educator named Kim Dong-won, who lives in Korea, and I asked him about visiting Kim Sok-chul, and he sent me this quite detailed test asking why was I doing this and what did I think I was getting myself into and what do you feel about Korean music? And at first he said no, and I sent him this long list of answers, and he finally agreed. And together we travelled throughout Korea trying to kind of isolate what is really unique about Korean music and Korean arts practice. And at that time, Kim Sok-chul was ill. He was in hospital, and he'd been told that if he left the hospital, he wouldn't live for more than a few days. And he decided to check out of hospital, and he held a private ritual for himself where he tried to connect with his deceased sister to resolve some family issues. And we were invited to attend this ritual, which really was an extraordinary thing to witness, and a very rare invitation for someone who isn't in the family.
There's more than one amazing Korean musician that you have met in your journey. Tell me about the pansori singer Bae Il-tong.
Well, we were driving through, we'd been in Mokpo down south, the southern end of South Korea, and I said to Kim Dong-won, I've heard these stories about these pansori singers. Pansori means epic story singing. These singers who isolate themselves in the mountains and just scream at waterfalls to train their voices, to reveal the voices. And traditionally I'd heard they do it for weeks or months. But he said, yeah, I know a guy that did that for years, 7 years. He went to a waterfall and trained himself.
Every day?
18 hours a day. And I was like, oh, yeah, that sounds... I was a bit suspicious. Anyway, we drive up to the mountains to Chirisan and meet Bae Il-tong, this extraordinary generous person, and he takes us to his waterfall and he starts singing, and it was just extraordinary. This amazing voice, I'd never heard anything like it. In fact, as soon as he started singing, I just burst into tears. It was just a wonderful musical experience. So he spent 7 years living at his waterfall, eating root vegetables that grow in the area, and practicing up to 18 hours a day throughout the seasons. And he said that in winter, when the water had frozen, was the best time to practice because you really felt alone and you could just work as hard as you could. So this is a track recorded with Beal Dong and trumpeter Scott Tinkler. We recorded this a few days ago.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Now I can see what you see in that kind of music. What do they see in your music?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say, but I know that Il Dong in Korea, he never gets the opportunity to just improvise. It just doesn't come up. It's very traditional music and it's performed in a traditional setting. And so he really has a great time when we do these kind of spontaneous recordings, or when we play with the group Daorum, which features, it's a larger ensemble featuring Australian and Korean musicians. And it's wonderful. I mean, we really have a deep friendship developing, and the music kind of reflects that trust that comes with friendship. So every time we play, we end up exploring musical areas that he would never get into in Korea. So it's a great experience for all of us.
And have you played this kind of music to a Korean audience?
Yeah.
How do they respond?
They loved it. It was incredible. We played at Cheonju Sori Festival, and that was to large audiences, and they were really enthusiastic.
Is it confronting? Because there is a certain sacred element, I imagine, in some of this that might be, seen as
being... Well, you'd assume so, but it doesn't seem that way. It seems the most open people to this kind of collaboration are the musicians themselves. I mean, Il Dong is the most traditional musician I've met, and he's just absolutely into any kind of collaboration. I think the mistake that's made is that by playing the way we play together, that somehow the traditional music will be depleted, and that's not the case at all.
In fact, you would say in some ways that you're honouring the spirit of it, perhaps.
Well, we'd love to think that. And look, the film's been screening around the world, and it's just so wonderful to imagine audiences hearing people like Il Dong for the first time and, getting a sense of his extraordinary musical abilities.
He could end up being a pop star. How does he feel about that?
Well, I know. For me, that would just be fantastic. This kind of hard rock band with him screaming up the front would be... Fantastic.
Well, thank you, Simon. Thanks for coming on to Artworks.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Simon Barker speaking with Suzanne Donisthorpe. And how about learning to sing by screaming at waterfalls? The documentary film Intangible Asset number 82 will be screening at the Canberra Film Festival on the 1st of November. Then it'll be on ABC TV early next year. And details of Simon's music are on our website. Also there online you'll find the latest edition of Private Readings. This is the diary that the Australian playwright Tom Holloway is keeping for us while he's spending the year overseas. In this entry he talks about the research he's been doing at the International Rehabilitation Centre for Torture Victims in Copenhagen.